It's August the 2nd, 2023. This is 508, a show about Worcester. I'm Michael Benedetti.
This is Brendan Mellican.
Hi, Brendan. How are you? Hey, how's it been?
I'm doing good. We're here
on Worcester Common today, and there's a fire alarm temporarily going off behind me. It's been going on for a long time, so it'll probably go off in the middle of the show.
Neither of us are on fire, though, so that's
we're good. And the authorities are back there, and there's no smoke, so it seems to be a pretty low-key, whatever the alarm is, it's a pretty low-key situation.
I think they're all getting lunch at Shawarma Palace.
Yeah.
Great place, Shawarma Palace. Brendan, what is going on in Worcester?
The perennial question.
What is going on? And we haven't talked in like a year and a half. We don't have to play catch up on anything, on everything, do we?
What's going on in Worcester today?
Today, well, aside from this fire, does not seem like a whole hell of a lot. Well, we're in the middle of an election season, a contentious one at that. We have a whole bunch of mayoral candidates that are out there. Was it Joe Petty, Christian King, Guillermo, and...
probably Bill Coleman.
Have we decided if Bill Coleman is running yet? I don't know.
He probably is.
I mean, he usually does, but, you know, I don't know. Somebody, with other people in that race, maybe Bill has decided that this is the time for him to take a step back.
Yeah.
What else do we have? We've got universal basic income in Worcester. That's
not
exciting.
Really.
We don't have universal basic income. We just have people calling something that isn't universal basic income, universal basic income. So that's great.
This drives me crazy. As somebody who like kind of likes the idea of UBI, and like definitely if you were to say what are four crazy programs we should try in our society to try to deal with some of our crises, I would say that's certainly one of the four. What we have in Worcester is a thing where between 25 and 100 people will get some extra money for 2 years, which is
awesome.
I think will help them,
sure.
But doesn't feel like universal anything.
Nope.
Feels pretty far from basic income for most people.
Right.
If you can live for $2,400 a year in Worcester.
I mean, or $1,200 a year in Worcester, I guess, more power to you.
So what we've done, Worcester has created a program that we should relabel income. And just let it ride.
I'm going to call it monthly grants.
Yeah.
The monthly grant program. I mean, and I'm not prepared to talk about this.
I should say, like, I feel like I should run the numbers and read the documents and whatever. I mean, so besides that and the election, those do feel like the big things that are going on.
Today, anyways.
Yeah.
And this
yeah.
damn fire that won't go out.
Yeah. I mean, am I
wrong to be not enthusiastic about this election? Because I've certainly whiplashed on this show down through the years between episodes where I've been sitting in this very common, advocating that people boycott the election and not vote, to interviewing every one of the candidates in depth and providing detailed voting guides.
Sure.
And this year, I don't feel like this is a boycott the election, don't vote year, but I do feel like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, you know, I think that there's a couple things that run in parallel on that front. This will probably be one of our local election cycles that is more important than most, right? Like, because we have the potential with the field of candidates, new and existing, where you could end up with an actual, like, progressive voting bloc that could be the majority of voting bloc in the city, or you could end up with a very regressive voting bloc on the council, which will obviously determine at least the next 2 years the direction things go. Or not, because we just learned that the city manager has veto power over the city council, so that's a whole different set of problems. But I think what I'm feeling anyways is so much has happened in Worcester over the last decade plus, probably closer to 20 years at this point. And most of those things that have changed are all things that I think at least I advocated for. We've at least discussed them at like a lot of development projects, a lot of new housing projects coming online. But in parallel, I feel like the entire soul of the city has kind of been ripped off like a scab and thrown away. And I'm finding it really difficult to get super enthusiastic about, even when there's potential for really good change on the table. It seems like the machine that is Worcester has kind of charted its own path. And it's kind of a boring one that involves a lot of aluminum paneling on new buildings. And not fun stuff. So yeah, I personally, I'm in like a semi-weird spot where like the civic-minded portion of my brain is super excited about what could be a very, very meaningful election cycle. And then the more realistic, I have to live here part of my brain is just kind of bored and wondering if we should start referring it to the failed social experiment known as Worcester.
One thing that I've really seen in the last 20 years in Worcester is, I remember when I first moved here like 20 years ago, people would talk to me about how Worcester had a really interesting ratio of cost of living to average income.
Yeah.
That the cost of living was higher than a lot of places in the city, but that the average income was way higher than a lot of places, which was why we had so many housing collectives in Worcester, why we had such a bohemian scene in Worcester, why there were so many people in their 20s, their 30s, even older, who could just kind of work part-time at whatever job and put most of their time and all their energy into doing non-income generating things, artistic things, social things. And these are, of course, you know, a possibly precarious lifestyle for an individual to live, but I think has a lot of positive externalities that other people are like, great, and now there are a lot of like art things going on, performance things going on, social things going on, that you don't have to devote your life to art to benefit from, as long as some people can devote their life to art. And for a lot of people, this is very marginal stuff, where they're like, really what I care about is, are the school's good, really what I care about is like, when I finally have like a night where my husband and I have free time and energy, can we go to a nice restaurant?
Sure.
Can we go, maybe can we go hiking in an interesting place? And that whether or not they can go to some fun punk party in somebody's basement is not really on their radar. But for a lot of people it is.
Yeah.
You know, over the last 20 years, the economy has gotten like a lot stronger in Worcester. We have a lot less of the city that's just like empty brownfields or abandoned buildings. And like most of the city, most of the nation, like we have this housing problem where the supply has not kept up with the demand. And so that ability to have a thriving bunch of bohemians in the city, non-trust fund bohemians, maybe I'll put it that way, has gone away. And I think that that's how I would describe what you're describing.
Yes.
Yeah, like it's too bad. You know, it's too bad. It also would be nice, honestly, if we had more affordable housing for a lot of other reasons, other than so I could go to more fun parties.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, I agree completely, and I'm probably an outlier on that side where I agree with everything you said in totality, and would just use myself as an example of the person who wanted to be able to find like a really great restaurant to go to dinner with my wife, but also really wanted to know where an awesome after party in somebody's basement was having.
Yeah.
And I wasn't looking for one or the other. I really enjoyed and embraced both. And losing the latter, it kind of bums me out a little bit because it's a balance that I think Worcester, whether it was intentional or not, had kept up for decades, at least my entire existence here. And it is, when you hear people talk about, you know, the city being boring, if they're just being generalizing or losing its soul, if you will. I heard that term used at Ralph's last week. I feel like that's what people are getting at. And I hope the powers that be in the city focus on that a little bit, or at least try and make sense of that in their own way, because it is an important part, from my perspective, of what kept interesting people here.
Yeah.
And the interesting people, even if they're small in number, do end up being the people that keep most of us here. Like, knowing something interesting and weird is going on is usually going to lend itself to a kind of a great, meaningful city experience for everybody that's here over time.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm just old and those things are still happening and I'm just not getting invited to cool places anymore, Mike.
Yeah, they are. I mean, we are getting older and we are invited to less cool parties, but there's also less cool parties.
Yeah.
And one reason that I like to present this, the whole thing about cost of living and whatever and housing crisis, is because I think there are people who I talk to as they're, you know, in middle age, who feel like my social life in Worcester is not as fun as it used to be,
right?
Or even if I've scaled back, I don't have the opportunities I used to, and that's like on me.
Yeah.
And again, I think that it's on that there were people who were really dedicating a huge amount of their time to making this stuff happen.
Yeah.
And that it's not just like, you can't just like wake up one morning and be like, well, midlife crisis time, now I'm gonna be fun party bohemian guy and fix this problem for the city. Like, you're not gonna do that. It's gonna take dozens of people in the city spending their lives to do that.
And I think that's also something I would agree with, because since the last time we've done a show, like, I've completed my 18-year mission of raising a human to adulthood. So now I am squarely midlife crisis guy who has like a ton of time back and can start doing my own thing.
Yeah.
Raising my head up a little bit and trying to see what is being offered for me in the city.
Yeah.
It's changed a lot. And it's kind of a bummer. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
To what extent do you feel like the city has bounced back post-COVID? All the things that went away during COVID have bounced back.
That's a really interesting thing that, so we had become so focused on like our restaurant scene and our, and yes, our bar scene, I think was a, you know, an accessory to that. Those are two things that, similar to the way you mentioned the housing crisis hitting the entire country, those are two sectors that I think are changing nationally in a very meaningful way, whether it's because of COVID or it's a demographic shift. But, you know, when I go out to restaurants, I'm finding that most of them close earlier. They are fine with that. They're still making their numbers work, but they're not these to last call establishments. And the bar scene seems to be changing in Worcester as well too, which, personally, I was getting kind of tired and old for that universe to begin with. But, you know, if you read trend papers on that industry, it does seem to be, again, like a national shift where the clientele is changing. And that is what constantly brings me back to, well, like, where are the cool, you know, basement parties that we used to have that has like a third component to that nightlife scene or that 18-hour sort of city scene or 24-hour city scene that have dried up in the meantime while we were putting so much focus on luring in big footprint restaurants and new establishments for nightlife. It seems like that part died while the other two are dying an organic sort of death from a cultural perspective. And yeah, I don't know. We're going to have some figuring out to do in the city.
It's sort of funny that this has happened at the same time as like we've legalized cannabis. Because part of me would be, if you had asked me 20 years ago, if you said, well, what if everybody in Worcester could just smoke weed all the time? Would it be, and like as somebody who doesn't smoke, it wouldn't impact me, but I would assume that that would mean that there would be more of a flourishing of all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But,
well, we're getting into the realm statewide now of social consumption. I believe that's this year. We're supposed to be rolling out, the committee is supposed to be rolling out its pilot program for social consumption. And I think that's something that will bolster both sides of that more public evening experience where it'll allow for both restaurants that are doing, say, like infusions and whatnot, as well as social settings similar to the place that we had down on Water Street, well, we still have for years, the Summit Lounge, that figured out a really interesting way to sort of take advantage of Worcester's lack of oversight for how they defined a smoking lounge and had a, you know, a weed smoking lounge. And they've been very successful down there, bringing in exactly the crowd that you were describing.
Yeah.
But especially if you look at the younger folks in their 20s and whatnot, it does seem as though there's less interest in alcohol and an uptick in marijuana usage, which, as someone who has always liked marijuana, like, all for it, but we haven't quite gotten to the point where we're able to incorporate that into the fabric of a city like Worcester. I'll be really curious how that goes, though, because I'm sure that's a place that will find a lot of opposition in City Hall, or at least concern, that probably shouldn't be there in comparison to a lifestyle that involves is heavy on alcohol versus weed.
Yeah.
So we're here downtown, and as two people who at least occasionally have worked downtown over the years, I think there's a lot less people wandering the streets of downtown than there were pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
That there's big employers who've just said, like, we're not going to have all these people in these offices downtown.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, it feels like we have this downtown that has all of this space and businesses and whatever, and maybe not the foot traffic to support that.
Yeah, no, and I think that's, I would not blame any one person or group in City Hall for that, because I think everybody was blindsided by how quickly the idea of remote work came into the fray via COVID. But the flip side of that is, what you can blame municipal leaders for is not keeping an eye on housing needs, as you mentioned earlier, not just here, but nationally, because that's a very easy thing to predict. Like, we know how to predict how many humans are going to exist down the line. And nationally, we are way behind the curve from a housing perspective. We have a unique opportunity right now. And I think, from what I gather, people are starting to take advantage of it, to start taking a lot of these office buildings and complexes that were built between the housing market collapse and COVID, and start converting them to housing. It's probably something that we should have focused a little bit more heavy on in the previous decade to COVID. knowing that our population was going to grow. What are we up officially now? Like 25,000 over our last census, from our like in-between census, like a significant number of people. You can't just throw 25,000 people into the mix without having a place for them to live. And if you don't plan for that, you're going to watch housing prices go up because it's just a consumer-driven market. Mm-hmm. So we went from being what I think could easily be argued was a horribly depressed housing market by in comparison to neighboring communities, to a overwhelmingly expensive or inflated housing market. And the easy way to deal with that is create more housing units. Like, we literally have the infrastructure around us right now mostly empty because people aren't coming back to offices.
How hard is it to convert, I don't know, one of these office spaces around here? How hard is it to convert this to apartments? Is it straightforward or is it a completely different thing?
I would say it's easy because you have to bring in all of the code concerns to go from an office building to a dwelling. So like code compliance is obviously huge, and you're definitely going to be running more stacks and whatnot for plumbing and what have you.
Right.
It's not so, but I wouldn't look at it as much as the cost perspective as the value that's there for the investors who do it or have the ability to do it. There are a couple investors in the city who are buying massive amounts of both shells and existing office spaces strictly for the purpose of converting to housing. So I think saying it's too hard is just hand waving way for folks who really, really believe that we need to bring people back to work and that they're going to like it whether they want to or not. Where I think a lot of the costs come into play is when it comes to rental units. To make cap rates work, you tend to want to be shooting more for, if you're an investor, shooting more for higher end apartments. And the finishing work on a higher end apartment certainly throws your costs through the roof. Like, at the end of the day, your construction costs, say like the door cost, not the cost of a door, but the actual door of the unit itself, whether it's affordable or luxury, the construction don't change that much. It's the finishing work that tends to change things, the amenities that are added on. It's much easier for an investor to see a return on their investment if they're shooting more for the luxury side of things. And it's starting to seem like Worcester can actually tolerate that from a financial perspective with the number of people who are moving in from communities within 128, cashing out of single family homes, walking away with a ton of cash, and can essentially live off of those returns in what Worcester would consider a luxury apartment.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me that it feels like politically, the farther away you get from affordable housing, the more pushback you're going to get from the city council, etc. Like, I'm not very prepared to debate housing policy today.
Yeah.
I tend to think that, like, any the most luxurious, you build a mansion downtown, this is going to decrease the housing costs for people. Not very much, not as much as if you build a bunch of affordable units or whatever.
Yes.
But that anything is going to help.
I mean, you've pushed a lot to me, but every bit of research that I've ever been able to come up on the housing side of things shows that the more housing you build, right? Because if you build anything that's new, that's where the bigger money is immediately going to go to, but it frees up capacity on what's already existing. And you end up with this weird push. Almost, it sounds a lot like trickle-down economics, but it's really not that. It's just you're freeing up capacity in existing housing, and existing housing becomes automatically the more affordable housing. The problem with that is you're talking about something that takes decades to actually see realized, because you don't just throw up, it's not SimCity. We're not just throwing up buildings overnight. And because we have, like a lot of cities our size, an actual housing crisis now, like we do need the housing now. The part, so, you know, I give a lot of credit to the folks whose focus is more on the affordable side. I just hope people have in the back of their head the realization that if you're doing this right and organically, following population trends and building for those population trends, you don't need to get caught off guard every couple decades when you have less housing on the affordable side than you actually need. You should be able to see that coming. And it's kind of a bummer that we just came out of a period, again, leading up to and through the COVID era, where money from a lending perspective was essentially free. Interest rates were so low, like finding that return on those interest rates was viable. And it is, I don't knock any one individual organization, but it is kind of a bummer that we didn't see a massive investment in, say, the Worcester Housing Authority 10 years ago to increase their numbers, or a huge increase in funding models from municipalities towards developers who are willing to build strictly affordable housing. The sexy stuff has always been, and will always be, luxury housing, because it's a great branding model for the city. But with lending rates as low as they were, and especially in a city like Worcester, where our borrowing capacity has always been relatively high and healthy, I mean, we did just watch the perfect economic cycle to get that kind of work done and prepare for what we're seeing now, which is massive shortages, to tick off that box and then let the luxury developers, for lack of a better word, just do their own thing, because they had the capital. And they're always going to have the capital to do that. They're smart. Yeah. That's why they're luxury housing developers. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm ready to ask you some questions about AI, but I can't believe that I'm like that ready to scrape the bottom of the barrel.
No.
I'm just not used to having these freeform conversations.
Well, we haven't had to talk for like 3 years, Mike. We just type at each other.
I think I'm also have lost the ability to listen to people while I'm holding a camera and ignore what they're saying. Because that was always, I feel like, my superpower, was to ignore what people would say so I could be formulating the next question so it would be ready. Which is why there are old 508 episodes where somebody answers a question and then I ask them the question they just answered and they're like, what's going on?
Yeah, but I mean, it was a superpower, and it was a beautiful thing that you were able to ignore what I was saying or our other guests were saying, mm-hmm. and it allowed myself or other guests to just completely make stuff up unencumbered. Now I feel like we actually have to be kind of honest and genuine with our words.
Yeah, you know,
Sometimes.
There's two trends that I keep. I'll tell you the two trends that I've been most surprised to not see around the city.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell me if maybe these are actually happening. And one is like, there being organizations that are like, oh yeah, we're being transformed by AI stuff right now. Because this is like the big thing that's happened since we last did a show. I think has been like GPT 3.5, GPT 4, and people saying like, wow, this is like useful to somebody in some way, rather than just being a fun game.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other, honestly, I feel like the other one is sort of like a post-COVID, like, we're going to embrace ventilation, we're going to embrace hygiene things, whatever. We're going to be looking out for the next pandemic.
Yeah.
Which is certainly something that I know a lot of people have talked about doing organizationally. And like you had like, I don't know, like the Boston Public Schools had like CO2 monitors in all their classrooms at one point. You could like see what the levels were, but like
people were not interested in this.
No, and that's just it. I mean, when it comes to talking about AI, the thing that always comes to mind is the Today Show in the mid 90s when Bryant Gumbel went on a rant about how this internet thing will never catch on, right? Like, mm-hmm. and it was right when the internet was like, there was stuff there and there was stuff to do, but like, if you weren't really a nerd, like making sense of the stuff to do didn't seem to have any practical application.
It was confusing, and for a lot of people, the stuff on there was boring.
And that's the reality, I think, of most technology when it comes into play. The part that sucks is because our power base, mostly on a federal level, just kind of ignored the internet for a decade and a half as well. We end up with the complete nightmare that is the modern internet, where like, you know, Twitter and Facebook are like what we grew up in. You probably similar to myself, grew up like semi-nerds, fascinated by this utopian reality that we might mm-hmm. be able to create by way of technology, and we end up with Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg deciding like who's going to win an MMA fight. Like, that's where the internet has brought us. I feel like we're at this exactly the same point with AI, where like all the problems that we just discussed in Worcester, whether it be housing when it comes to population models, infrastructure, because it's an election cycle, we now have like the old guard of politicians doing their streets and sidewalks campaigns. Like, these are literally jobs that we, and I don't mean like employment jobs, but they're tasks that can just be turned over to AI models to figure them out for us and better, right? Like, I've mentioned to you a couple times in other capacities, like getting out of the side of the city where I live right now makes me feel like Snake Plissken. Because since the start of the summer, every single major throughway that connects me to the rest of the city is all under massive construction at the same time. It just doesn't leave me any options other than doing what I promised you I would never do, go through Holden to get out of my neighborhood. And like somewhere in a planning department, like that's the perfect example of, you know, something that software, especially from the AI side of things, would be able to map out. we've spent the last couple of years bickering about law enforcement and the use of technology and drones and cameras and whatnot. I mean, the city shouldn't be investing probably in, as much in license plate readers that barely turn a have a return on investment, but LiDAR on the front of every city-owned vehicle to be mapping potholes and decomposing road infrastructure and whatnot. So we're ahead of the curve, and like that planning isn't a human thing. Like, we're gonna go out and set down that little tube that measures how many cars that go by. We're just keeping an eye on the entire city at once in a meaningful way. But the only way you get that positive use of technology, I think we've seen enough now, is if your leadership base, especially on a federal level, is ahead of the technological curve, and is there to set parameters, both from a privacy and a safety perspective, as well as making sure the tools are being used in a meaningful way. But as you and I both probably are aware now, it seems like most, at least on the federal side, most of our leaders are just figuring out how to get the clock to stop blinking on their VCRs. And I don't have a lot of hope that we're going to see, we're not going to see Sam Altman from OpenAI in the Biden administration or any other administration in the near future align themselves to stay on topic and make sure that those tools are used in a meaningful way.
Yeah. And I should mention in passing that I think to some people, us talking about AI at all is going to be ridiculous.
Yes.
To which I can say, sorry. And to the and to other people, the idea that we're talking about AI without acknowledging that probably the big impact is that it destroys the solar system.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I acknowledge this. This is beyond the scope of this show.
Yeah. But if you are a professional and I happen to be seeing this and want to come on and tell us how we're wrong, I would love that too. But
yeah. We used to always end up the show by talking about what we were excited about with the city, like in the city that weekend. This is actually the first weekend in a while where I feel like my plate is really clear and just hanging around is going to be my weekend.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of doing the same. And it's, as I mentioned earlier, this weekend is my last weekend locally with my son before he heads off to college. So we're just going to make the most of that, chill out, and then hit the road.
Congratulations.
Thanks. It's
been a long time.
It has been a long time.
Long time coming.
Well, this show has also been a long time coming. It's anybody who's watching this, listening to this, it's great to have you interested in this podcast. As always, we welcome your feedback. You can email us at pieandcoffee@gmail.com, or you can call Brendan personally and swear to his answering machine.
Which I encourage. Yes, please do. Just make it interesting.
And until next time, this is Mike Benedetti and Brendan Milliken, and we will see you on another show.